Hello and welcome to episode 68 of Linux After Dark. I'm Joe.
I'm Chris.
I'm Terry.
And I'm Dalton.
Welcome back, chaps. Dalton, you posed a question to us recently. When did consumer computers peak?
When did they? I'm not going to qualify this with like, when did laptops get the best? Or when did this architecture get the best? Just, what was the best computer? Tell me what the best computer was.
The best computer has not been made yet. They are continuing to get better all the time. And I've no idea why we're even doing this segment today, because this is nonsense.
That's just a cop-out, though. Clearly, the correct answer is second or third gen iSeries.
Agreed with Gary. I find them really unexciting, Dalton, I think was my first instinct, right? I keep seeing on eBay recently this Dell Studio desktop, which I never owned, and it's curvy, and it comes with a stand, and it's a bit weird, it's a bit quirky. And I remember the days when you could have a tower or a desktop and laptops look different. It feels really homogenized now. And I don't get excited about the actual hardware anymore. I don't know what you guys think.
I think Dell is actually still using that design, but they're using it on the Alienware triangular prism weird thing now. Mm. So you can still get that, the kind of, I don't know, ventilation design on that old studio thing, but you're going to need to way overpay for a gaming PC for it.
Yeah, I'm talking about your run-of-the-mill consumer sector where, like with smartphones, we've converged into the same design for a lot of stuff. Mm.
Yeah, it's like the smartphones are all just a slab of glass with a camera bump on the back, and laptops are all just a black plastic thing, and some of them have a track point, and some of them are worse than that.
Do you actually use the track point?
Yes.
I just don't get that. Like, I had a, what was it called? It was an A20M, there you go, an IBM ThinkPad. And that only had the nipple thing. And it was a nightmare to use. I mean, I kind of got used to it, but why would you use that when trackpads exist?
What can I tell you? You're holding it wrong. Yeah. Apart from on the Z1, where they got rid of the bloody buttons for the track point, which is really annoying, Lenovo. Bring it back. But I don't know. I've used it for ages. I just kind of like it. It's easier to use than the touchpad.
I'll tell you what is easier is a combination. So where trackpads used to be a trackpad with two physical buttons, and I'd rest my thumb on the physical buttons and use my finger as a trackpad and then click with my thumb. And that was far easier than having to do all these gestures with two fingers and three fingers and all that nonsense.
Well, yeah, now I have to have three peripherals on my desk. I'm that guy who has on the right-hand side a trackball, in the middle a keyboard, and on the left-hand side I now have to have a Bluetooth touchpad to do all the stupid gnome gestures. But it is what it is. I got used to it now.
But we've done various retro challenges and everything, and it just makes you realize how slow and shit those old computers are compared to what we've got now.
Well, that's exactly why I think that it peaked at second or third gen Intel, because that's a machine that I could still pick up and comfortably use now. And anything older than that, it starts getting progressively more difficult, I think. Like I've said before, I could scrape by with a Core G8, but realistically, if it was something I was going to use every day and run three web browsers and five chat clients on, I could probably get by with like an i5-3570. Anything older than that? Not really. Anything newer than that? It feels like diminishing returns for a lot of the stuff that I do anyway.
Again, it's because you just use other people's computers mostly, Gary.
What can I say? You know, in the previous episode, we talked about doing stuff outside of the actual computer and the benefits of that. I still think that that's probably the right way to go.
So the reason why I posed this question is because recently I was going back through a couple computers. I was using my framework laptop, which had Windows on it. And then for development stuff, I was using my XPS 13 9370 because I needed native Linux. I could not do it on WSL for what I was doing because I was trying to scrape things directly out of the Wi-Fi driver. And so I was using the XPS. And as I was using it, it's like, oh man, this computer's nice. Wow, I really like this computer. And then I went to the framework and say, oh, this computer isn't quite as nice, is it?
Well, I've got two XPS 13s. Well, I say I gave one to my wife. That was the 11th gen Intel. And that, I think, is arguably the perfect small laptop.
Yes.
I know that some people would disagree in terms of battery life and stuff, but this battery has held up nicely. So I gave that to her when I thought I didn't need it anymore. And then I just bitterly regretted it. And then found myself, I think it's a 9360. So it's the 8th gen Intel that's capable of Windows 11 and charges from USB-C, because they're kind of my baselines now. Not that I'm going to run Windows 11 on it, but if I'm going to give it to someone who needs Windows, it may as well be capable of that one day. So it's not quite as good as that 11th gen one, because I mean, it's 3 years older, so you wouldn't expect it to be as good, but I do like an XPS 13, I must say.
So here's where the other shoe drops on that, right? I think that the 9360, which is the one that still has USB-A ports,
yeah,
it's a little bit thicker than the 9370 that I have. I think the 9360 was the perfect computer, and we have only gone downhill from there.
No. Although, yes, you're right with USB-A ports. The webcam is in the wrong place. It points up your nose.
Oh, that is true. But, okay, so, yes, here's the other shoe. We've got three legs all of a sudden. We know how to make the perfect computer at this point, and no one does it. And not because it's like a matter of opinion or something, but because it isn't profitable to do so. That's where I was trying to get with all of this. I'm sorry I brought you into the capitalist rant.
More anti-capitalism propaganda from you.
I'm with you, Dalton, right? My work machine is an 11th gen, and when I'm buying laptops with our stack of laptops eBay habit, I'm gravitating towards 8th gen because we've won, but at what cost, as they say, for the 11th gen? Because yes, there are some gains in the performance per core, but the 8th gen had 4 physical cores, and a lot of the machines there are a bit chunkier, but they're much more upgradable. They don't tend to solder the keyboard itself into the top case as much. I'm talking about if you pick business grade machines. That is where I gravitate towards the 8th gen ThinkPads and Latitudes and an XPS. And after that, they keep doing things that annoy me. There are less ports. They're making it thinner and everything crammed in. I have to agree with you. I think when Gary mentioned his 3rd gen, desktops and laptops are a bit different. But yeah, the 8th gen of laptops, they got it right. And now everything that they do, I don't like it.
No, you see, I'm still going to argue that, at least with Intel, I mean, we've not even mentioned AMD, but Intel-wise, the 11th gen was just before the P cores and E cores nonsense, which still doesn't quite work well with Linux. And yeah, they're USB-C only, but come on, it's 2024. Get with the program. Everything should be USB-C at this point.
Well, if I take Chris's argument to the nth degree, then I'm going to say it was probably actually 6th gen. If you think about something like a ThinkPad T460, it had the dual batteries with the hot swap worry battery. It had upgradable RAM. You could put 2 SSDs in it. You could dock it on a physical docking station that it clunked in and out of on the desk. Sure, it didn't have USB-C and stuff, but that's fine. And everything was good. 1080p screen. It was great.
No, everything apart from the dock I've got in my T480, and I've got USB-C charging.
Well, maybe, yeah. From there, I moved on to the X series because I became a delicate flower who wanted to not carry around a heavy machine. So maybe I'm missing out on a bunch of more recent stuff.
Well, the X270 that I've got in theory, but my niece has got currently for the next few months, that, again, USB-C charging, 1080p screen, nice keyboard, reasonable trackpad, reasonable screen.
And you know what it's contemporaneous with? The XPS 13 9360.
Yeah.
That's when they peaked. That's the best.
No, because I still maintain that I think it must be 93. I don't know the codes with XPSs, but the one that's got the 11th gen i7 in it that my wife has got, and 16 gigs of RAM. The keyboard is slightly bigger because it goes all the way to the edges. The bezels are absolutely tiny. It goes all the way to the bottom of the screen. It's like a taller screen than 1080p. I'm telling you, that was where XPSs peaked. Before all this nonsense with P cores and E cores, and now they've got like the 14 and the 16, and they haven't got a headphone jack, and no, nonsense. So if you want me to say a small laptop, definitely that 11th gen Intel XPS 13.
But here, look, let me throw another card on the table, because I have been messing about with a 2nd or 3rd gen Latitude, And if you specifically focus on the input devices, I know you've already mentioned the touchpad, Joe. So it fulfills, I'm just like you, I want my thumb on physical buttons and one finger or two fingers for the touchpad. That's what I want. I don't want the nipple and I don't want just one pad. With the keyboard, the X220 and the second and third gen, the travel is just right. The Chiclet keyboard after that on the ThinkPads is okay. My work latitude feels like typing on stamped on popcorn. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's horrible.
Yep.
See? So what we need to do is get a chainsaw and all of everything from third to 11th gen, take it all apart and Frankenstein it together. And then you have your peak consumer piece of hardware.
Isn't this where you end up with people Frankensteining newer motherboards into like a ThinkPad X61?
Yes, and they're doing it for a good reason.
Sleeper laptops. That is the next. That's what's going to happen, isn't it? My wife's going to come in. She's like, I thought you were getting rid of the stack of laptops. Why are you wearing a welding mask and you have sparks coming off a circular saw?
Okay, this episode is sponsored by Collide. What do you call an endpoint security product that works perfectly but makes users miserable? A failure. The old approach to endpoint security is to lock down employee devices and roll out changes through forced restarts, but it just doesn't work. IT is miserable because they've got a mountain of support tickets, employees start using personal devices to get their work done, and executives opt out the first time it makes them late for a meeting. You can't have a successful security implementation unless you work with end users. That's where Collide comes in. Their user-first device trust solution notifies users as soon as it detects an issue on their device and teaches them how to solve it without needing help from IT. That way, untrusted devices are blocked from authenticating, but users don't stay blocked. Collide is designed for companies with Okta, and it works on macOS, Windows, Linux, and mobile devices. So if you have Okta and you're looking for a device trust solution that respects your team, support the show and go to collide.com/linuxafterdark to watch a demo and see how it works. That's KOLIDE.com/linuxafterdark. Quick bit of admin then. First of all, thank you everyone who supports us with PayPal and Patreon. We really do appreciate that. If you want to join those people, you can go to linuxafterdark.net/support. And for either $5 or $10 a month on Patreon, you can get an advert-free RSS feed of either just this show or all the shows in the Late Night Linux family. And if you want to get in contact with us, you can email show@linuxafterdark.net. Well, I can't believe that we've got this far without anyone saying M something. M1, M2.
Okay, I was just about to bring it up because the MacBook Pro, after they went with the M series stuff, is kind of a perfect form factor and it's got good input devices and everything. It's like, why doesn't everyone just make a laptop like this? Why do we have to keep putting AI buttons and shit on them?
Yeah, but I don't like the notch. I've never actually seen it in person. I've only got the M1 Air.
You don't notice it.
Yeah, the title bar is up there.
You don't notice it after a while.
Yeah, but if you're running a proper operating system on it, like Asahi, surely it just gets in the way.
How often do you really need the thing that's right in the middle of the title bar?
Well, if you're using GNOME.
But I'm sure there's an extension that would move that. It'd be fine.
I need to know that I'm in Jitsi and it's Mozilla Firefox. That would be obscured by this stupid notch.
Well, for me, I actually have moved away from daily driving the M series laptop, which I know, shock horror. And I bought a ThinkPad.
Was that just because you like variety?
Well, it was mainly because I realized that I could get everything that the M series laptop gave me on a Linux machine, which was pre-owned for half the price of the M series laptop.
Yeah, but you already had the bloody M series laptop.
Yes, I know, but what else am I going to put on the stack? You know, it hasn't had a new edition for a while.
Well, that's why with those, you know, 8th gen ones that Chris was talking about being the sweet spot. Yeah, does it have anything to do with them being about £100 now and not £3,000 like an Apple one?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a ThinkPad for £75 recently, and yeah, you can probably get a Core 2 Duo white plastic unibody MacBook for that.
If you're lucky.
Because they hold their price so much, yeah. So that is a big part of it, and I don't know what it is. I mean, a post went viral fairly recently, and it is literally like Linux geeks will find any way to put Arch Linux on an old ThinkPad now. I don't think that we're like, by the way, Archers, but does seem to be a magnet to do this.
Yeah, it's like when I got the X270 and the T480 and I sent photos to my friend. He's like, why do you buy shitty old ThinkPads that you could get a proper machine? It's like, no, that's the fun, to put Linux on it and eke loads of performance out of it and keep it going.
And also because a T480 is perfectly fine.
We've hit Pepperidge Farm, haven't we? We've hit ThinkPad fucking Pepperidge Farm. That's what's happened to us.
Let's do some feedback then. David wrote in regarding episode 61, where we talked about devices and software that we trust. I'm a bit disappointed you guys didn't mention using a managed switch with VLAN capabilities if you're justifiably concerned about LAN privacy.
Yeah, it's a fair point. We didn't mention it. We do it. I mean, I don't know if you're still doing it, Gary, but I think you are. I'm doing it. I have multiple VLANs. There's one which doesn't have internet by default, and I can punch a hole per device in the firewall. I've got a guest network. Anyone that comes with anything to do with Windows is going on that. It's client isolated. So yeah, it's a very good point. You know, janky stuff that I don't trust, or other people's devices that I just don't trust that they're keeping up to date or not downloading random crap on. They're going on a VLAN. They're isolated. They're client isolated if it's wireless.
But the problem specifically in that episode was that Joe doesn't trust his Amazon Fire Stick. And that thing needs to be on the internet. And the part that we don't trust is the Fire Stick's connection to the internet and what it is doing and sending.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can't block it from being on the internet. That's its entire point. Isolating it from the rest of the stuff in your home is good, but doesn't entirely solve the issue.
Yeah.
Security convenience, isn't it?
Mm.
And you can put a Fire Stick on a separate VLAN if you don't want it to see your other devices, but then you have to do stuff like MDNS mirroring because it expects to be on the same subnet, and often their devices don't like having to jump through hoops to break that.
Yeah, that's exactly the trade-off that I make with things like Chromecasts. They probably should be on a separate VLAN, but I've had the MDNS forwarding stuff break one too many times that when my wife and I just want to sit down to watch a film and we can't Chromecast it and I have to sit and fix MDNS forwarding, it's just not worth the trade-off at that point. So I still use VLANs quite heavily. I've got a DMZ1, I've got an IoT1, I've got a guest one, I've got a main one, I've got one for stuff that I'm just messing about with. I've probably got a WAN one as well, actually, come to think of it. I've got lots of VLANs, and if you do it properly and you make sure that clients can't tag traffic on certain VLAN ports and stuff, and that you're doing the blocking and stuff correctly, it's a good idea. But I think, like you said, Dalton, for Joe's specific application where he's got the Fire Stick and his threat vector is, I'm worried about the data the Fire Stick is sending to Amazon, not really much you can do about that other than throw the thing out the window.
The other day, I went to charge my phone and I realized, oh no, I left the Fire Stick plugged in for like 2 days.
Oh no.
Oh no.
All my data's.
Yep.
The difficulty as well with the internet connection specifically is, it's like with the Unify access points when they put metrics in. If you have stuff like Pi-hole and you start blocking it, they crash. They haven't tested some of this traffic being blocked. Or if you don't want the DNS request to go certain places, especially with DNS over HTTP, it's harder now to force the DNS down because it's encrypted. It's just a nightmare. And sometimes you, just as you said, Gary, I just want to watch a fucking film.
Yeah. I guess the one threat vector we didn't talk about, which this would help with for Joe's Fire Stick or my random Chinesium cameras, is east-west movement across the network. So if you're concerned about the Fire Stick or the Chinesium cameras or whatever it is being compromised by someone from the outside and being used to get into the rest of your network, sticking them in their own VLAN is going to help with that. Doesn't necessarily help with them phoning home that much.
I'm not concerned about that with the Fire Stick, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I trust Amazon to be a shower of bastards in a very specific way. And that's not the way that I trust them to be bastards.
Yeah, exactly right. Fire Stick, probably fine. Random Chinese cameras that I ordered, probably not so fine.
Yeah, me and Gary have the same cameras and we just don't let them have internet access whatsoever. No. And luckily they work that way. So trade-offs. Or you can do what Joe does with Windows machines and just air gap it. Go the old-fashioned route. Just don't let it have a network connection.
Well, my cameras are in their own VLAN. That is a /32 for each camera. And they have no outbound access to anything. And the NAS pulls the RTSP feed from them. And it can only talk to them on the port for the feed. So maybe that's a little bit overkill, but that's what I did. Can't even talk to each other.
For listeners who aren't network nerds, a /32 means there is only one IP address available in the subnet. And actually, I don't think it's even possible.
No, it's not. I think it's like a /30 or something so that they can go back to the firewall. But my point stands. They're literally in a thing where it is just them and the firewall so that the routing can work. And that's it.
They're in Gary's network purgatory.
I mean, that's like five VLANs in itself just for cameras.
I was hoping that Cisco didn't teach me wrong in CCNA classes because it's like, wait, you need like, you need the .0 and the .255 address.
Yes, you do.
All zeros and all ones. How does that work?
Yeah, it's basically the smallest network space that I could put them in that would allow for one device plus the broadcast address plus the reset.
Right, well, we better get out of here then. Remember, show@linuxafterdark.net if you want to send in your feedback. We'll be back in a couple of weeks, but until then, I've been Joe.
I've been Chris.
I've been Gary.
And I've been Dalton.
See you later.